Yeah, warriors been taking it down. Raise your voices and stand up this town. We're the champions of craft beer sport. Tolkien Audio, we hold down the fort.
All right, we'll jump back into this here in just a second, but we've grabbed another pint. What do you go with here for round two?
I went Stockyards Shattered Mirror Galaxy IPA.
Okay.
A double dry hopped strong beer.
Nice. I didn't even know that was in there, I don't think. I'm not sure if I've tried that one or not.
Oh, no.
No, that's all right. No. By all means.
Take your last one.
No. If it's in that fridge, it's up for grabs. That's
good.
That's the deal.
Because you asked me to play a Leafs overtime goal against
the Sens. That's right. No, that's right.
I didn't play it.
You didn't play it, so I actually don't owe you shit.
Well, that's why I didn't grab anything from the red fridge.
That's right. No, that's where the secret stash is historically.
Had I played the clip, it would have been red fridge all day.
100%. And I wouldn't even have blinked twice.
But I didn't play it because screw the Leafs.
We don't like that kind of talk around here, but we'll have to tolerate it for now. I have stuck with the Nita Beer Company,
nice.
Their stout, Perfectum. It's one of the very first craft beers here in Ottawa that I ever tried going into Nita. That was, I've always been, a stout guy, both in build and in beer taste. And they saw...
Life imitates art.
That's it, man.
Something like that.
So they had... The Perfectum sitting there, and anytime he puts it back, it's just a traditional stout. It's not one of these. He does some other things. He's got the coconut brown that I like. He does some fruity things in the summer that are good. This is just a straight up traditional stout, a little bit dry, kind of roasty. Very nice.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. So nothing new about this one, but a favorite for sure. So I just went. I hit you with the Elton John. What else you got in your top three here?
Well, we've talked about him a little bit already. But number two for me, Bruce Springsteen. And I've been lucky.
Can I take you all the way back to your Vancouver one? Did either one of them appear with the other on that tonight?
They did
stand?
Not.
No, okay.
It was disappointing.
Right, okay.
Santa did appear, though.
Okay.
He was in the crowd.
Fascinating.
It was late November.
Right. It's a little early.
I remember I had a Movember stash, so
I used to do that.
Bruce would have been November 26th, 2012, but
the stash would have been in pretty good.
Yeah, it was
end of November.
Well, I mean, 2012, my facial hair was not as strong as it is today, and even today, that's debatable.
Okay.
But yeah, some guy came dressed up as Santa Claus, and so Bruce pulled him on stage and sang "Santa Claus is Coming to Town," which was
I've said this a few times as far as like. Celebrity performed Christmas songs. That's the one. That's the banger. That's the best one. It's the Bruce Springsteen "Santa Claus is Coming to Town."
That's
the
outstanding.
One. Yeah.
I love his cover of "Merry Christmas, Baby" as well. The
yeah.
old Otis Redding tune.
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
Otis's version more.
Sure.
But that's a good one.
Yeah.
Tom Petty's "It's Christmas All Over Again." I don't hate that one.
The Vandals. "It's Christmas Time for My Penis." A classic. Everyone's familiar with.
Honestly, I'm not familiar with that one.
I'll remind you in December.
Please do.
Yeah.
Dominic the Donkey, the Italian Christmas Donkey. That's a good one.
Yeah. Boy to the World, also the Vandals. Sorry, I'm not helping.
I'm a big Bob Rivers guy, too. The
okay.
Santa Claus is Fooling Around is a personal favorite. And Santa Claus to the tune of Iron Man, I Am Santa Claus.
I am Santa Claus. I like it. All right.
It's pretty solid.
Where did you see Bruce? What's this particular set
list? So I've been lucky to see Bruce three times, and I'm going again when he comes to Ottawa. My wife has never seen Bruce.
Right.
So that was sort of a must for us, and we'll be seeing
him
in
year?
Ottawa. Yeah, he was supposed to be last November, and I think he got like peptic ulcers or something,
Oof.
And he had to cancel and postpone all of his tours. So his Ottawa tour was postponed. Almost a year to the day.
Okay.
But he's coming through Ottawa in November. We had to sign up for like the raffle to be even able
yeah, yeah.
to buy the tickets. But we were lucky we got tickets. So be going to see Bruce and the E Street Band again. But I've seen them three times, all three times on their Wrecking Ball tour in 2012
right.
with my buddy Tyler, the Steiner, as I would call him. Fondly, but he
sure.
I remember I used to try and get him to listen to like The Who and Led Zepp. All he would listen to was Bruce Springsteen. And so he brought me the Toronto show at the Sky Dome August 24th, 2012. Is the first time I saw Bruce Springsteen. Also
you had a
saw
big
him
year
in,
for concerts in 2012.
Yeah. yeah. Also saw him in Ottawa. And you want to talk about individual moments. I touched Bruce Springsteen. Because in Ottawa, during Hungry Heart, he crowd surfed back to the stage and went directly over top of me. So I passed Bruce along.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that was pretty cool. But
you grab his wallet or anything?
No. And the Bruce butt was there.
Yeah.
The famous one. It's on the cover of Born in the USA. And I did not grab it.
Okay.
I thought about it.
Sure.
But I didn't grab it. Yeah. I was like, he's probably been groped enough. I don't need to contribute.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I got him around the shoulder and like behind the knee as I passed him along. But that was pretty cool. But that show in Toronto at the Sky Dome was the first time I'd ever seen him live. And he played for almost 3 hours. I think it was like 2 hours, 45 minutes, 30 songs on the set list. And just seeing a showman like Bruce Springsteen for the first time, and you'd hear stories that like you don't understand Bruce until you've seen him live.
Right.
And as a big music guy, I sort of hand waved that. And seeing him live really changed how I was a fan of Bruce. And I still don't consider myself a full-blown Steiner like Tyler was. But as far as live shows go...
There are people who've seen this guy 20, 30, 40 times.
Right? Well, and that's the thing. I saw him 3 times on the same tour, and he has his staples that he plays at every show.
Yeah.
But one of the things that makes Bruce Springsteen unique is he'll never play the same set list twice. And you look at like guys like Paul McCartney, and you look at different stops on the tour, and it's the same songs.
Yep.
I saw The Cure last summer in Montreal, and there were people around us at the Bell Center in Montreal looking at their phones to see their most recent set list to see what they were going to play next.
Right.
And that's not what you get with Bruce Springsteen. He takes sign requests at every show.
Hmm.
He loves changing it up. He'll do things where, and he wasn't doing this on the Wrecking Ball tour, but where he'll do like Stump the Band, where he'll take requests and the whole point is to try and find a song.
Anything that they don't remember.
They won't be able to play.
Right.
Like covers. It's anything goes.
Oh, okay.
So
not
like,
just out of their own catalog.
You can do You Never Can Tell, like the Chuck Berry song. And one of the most memorable moments was he played a song, I think it was in Vancouver, where he did a sign request because fans will show up on the floor with signs.
Yeah.
And somebody made a... Bruce has a song called Redheaded Woman, where it's... I guess it's sort of a love letter to Patty Scalfa, his wife.
Okay.
And it gets a little risque.
Sure.
Like, you haven't lived till you've had your tires rotated by a redheaded woman. Till you've got down on your knees and tasted a redheaded woman.
Ah!
But somebody,
Bruce.
Yeah, somebody in Vancouver had made a sign of a redheaded woman in a green dress with an arm that moved, requesting redheaded woman. And the sign gets passed up, and Bruce is laughing on stage. Like, he's like, we don't even play this song, but this sign's so good, we got to play this song. And so he's yelling out instructions to the band as
sure.
he's singing the song, and like bridge next, like in this key, and he's yelling out instructions. So that's one of the great
that's
things
awesome.
About Bruce shows.
That is cool.
And some of the sign requests in Toronto were unbelievable. Like he played Sherry Darling, Rosalita, like some really great live show songs.
Right.
But one of the things about this show, and not to get too serious or anything, but in 2011, lost one of my best friends, Ange, she passed away in a car accident. And her and Tyler had been on again, off again, but like high school sweethearts,
right.
sort of dating. They weren't dating at the time that she passed away, but at the time, Tyler was like, that was the love of my life.
Yep.
And so we're at this Bruce Springsteen show, and he starts playing My City of Ruins. A song that he wrote for the people lost during 9/11.
Yep.
And about 2/3 of the way through the song, he sort of gets into a little bit of a breakdown and introduces all the different members of the band and starts talking about, you know, getting together with loved ones at a cookout. And you look around and you see the people who are there and you see the people who are missing.
Yeah.
And I believe one of the things he said was, like, if you're here and we're here, they're here. And again, Tyler was the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan. And so Bruce starts talking about like the people that he's missing, the people that you're missing. Like if you're missing somebody, I want you to yell. And we were at this show with a big group of people, but my sister was there, I was there, Tyler was there. And I remember Tyler just having his arms around both me and my sister's shoulders and just absolutely bawling.
Yeah.
As we had this incredibly powerful, cathartic moment listening. And it's one of those things that from a distance, it feels like Bruce is almost a little cheesy. Sure. With how he does these moments, but he's so earnest and he's so genuine. And it's one of those moments that I'll remember. And I mean, it's extra tough because Tyler's gone now too, but it's one of those things that I'll remember that for the rest of my life. And the catharsis of Tyler finally almost being able to say goodbye,
yeah,
in that moment. Yeah. And it was, and there were other incredible, like he played a piano version, just him on the piano, of Incident on 57th Street from his second album. And like the roof was open at Sky Dome and like the wind's coming through and it's just absolutely haunting and incredible and affecting. But that moment during my City of Ruins is the one that really, really sticks with me. And it's one of those, just the power of music. And it's...
Well, this is it. It affects everybody a little differently, right? And
yeah.
What might be, at any given concert, a song that you're sort of like, I could take this one or leave it no matter how much I like this artist. Someone in that building's going, this is the one that means something to me tonight, right? Yeah. Like, this is... It's a time and a place thing. It's a personal thing. And that's the best part about it is, you know, I'm a fan of Bruce in a very casual way. I know the hits, right? I know how big he is. If he was, you know, if I had the opportunity, I'd go see him. But to somebody else, that's the moment, right? I need this particular moment of therapy right now with this particular artist. That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's just. Again, like I was, when I knew we were going to be doing this pod, I went and watched the YouTube video of the My City of Ruins. And just to this day, like it brings me back. Like I was there at Rogers Center in Toronto. And it's.
I don't have a good transition.
There's no such things. And don't worry about it.
No,
it's all good.
But I think this is why these episodes or these types of shows are worth doing is everybody's got a story. Everybody's got, you know, if I was to say, you know, who's going to round out your podium of favorite three bands, I mentioned I was going to try and lay off the hip here and I wasn't going to be able to talk about Anti-Flag, would have a band called the Gaslight Anthem that is probably rounds out my podium. And they've done a few things with Bruce, right? They're a band out of New Jersey.
I inherited a couple of Gaslight Anthem albums on vinyl from Tyler.
Nice.
When he passed away, actually. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I was overly enthusiastic.
No, that's that. No, it's actually one of those things that's really, for me, really wonderful. Right. And like my turntable at home that I listened to vinyl on was Tyler's. Right. And I've got some of his Bruce albums, some Gaslight Anthem.
And they've done some things together. Bruce has appeared on stage with them and it's not the same band. The Gaslight Anthem started off, you wouldn't call them punk rock, but more in that vein. And then they sort of became more of like a modern version of folk rock, right? And the way the stories they tell, the type of music they write. And Bruce has talked many times about being like, yeah, it's not the same as what I do or the same as what Bon Jovi does, but it's kind of the next chapter of or the next generation of, right? That has kind of the more modern, I don't know, if polished is the right word, but like it's produced in a more contemporary way to this era. And he showed up on stage with them multiple times to sing the 59 sound or whatever. He actually appeared on Gaslight's last album with them to sing one of the verses. They've worked together a lot. And that's sort of my connection to, and you know, I've said to some friends of mine who are kind of a similar vintage to you and I, that like this to me reminds me of Bruce a little bit, and they can kind of hear it. But when I've said it to my mom, who's not really interested in modern rock, they're just like, no, this is terrible compared to Bruce. Don't ever make that comparison to me again, right?
Yeah. One of the other cool collaborations that Bruce has done, and another one of my honorable mentions, I've seen Tom Morello twice.
Oh, nice.
I saw him when Rage came through at Blues Fest, which was just incredible. And I saw Tom Morello perform as the Night Watchman at Folk Fest.
Oh, really?
But Bruce did a show where he brought Tom Morello on stage with him, and they did a version of The Ghost of Tom Joad.
Oh, nice.
And Tom Morello ripped one of the most incredible guitar solos you'll ever see. and he and Bruce do sort of dueling solos at one point, and then Bruce lets him take over. But you see, one of my favorite things is when you watch someone who's one of the best at their craft be blown away by someone else.
Yes.
And you watch Bruce and Tom Morello in this video, and Bruce is just laughing at what Tom Morello is doing with his guitar.
A bit of a mutual admiration society. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But when I saw Tom Morello at Folk Fest, he played that version of The Ghost of Tom Joad and sang it himself.
Nice,
and,
man.
Like, ripped a solo with his teeth, playing the guitar with his teeth, and it was just incredible. Yeah. But they ended up collaborating together, and they re-recorded The Ghost of Tom Joad among another few songs, including, I think, 41 Shots, a protest song that Bruce wrote about a man, I believe in New York, who was shot 41 times by police while reaching for his wallet. And I believe that's one of the songs on this album that... But Bruce and Tom Morello have now worked on albums together. Right. And you would think, like, Tom Morello, Rage Against the Machine, Audioslave.
What are they going to have in common? But you can find it, right? You can make some magic.
Exactly.
I'm going to take us to a slightly different world. I'm going to go back to 2005, and I'm going to talk about Green Day.
Nice.
At Molson Park in Barrie. And this is a weird one for me. I've been...
Did they play The Grudge, the song that you have the drop of me quoting?
I don't think they do have
okay, good.
I don't think they did play that.
We don't need to play that drop out of context.
It's so funny that you bring that up because I had totally forgotten and now it's back on my radar.
I blew it.
That's hilarious. At the time, like I said, I sort of, and in a fairly poser way, was into the punk rock thing, right? But it was a very pop punk thing. It was a surface level punk rock thing when I'm finishing up high school and starting college and this and that, right? But, you know, I've been into Hot Topic. I've got the shirts. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. But you're sort of growing out of it a little bit. And so I loved the early Green Day stuff, like everybody did, right? But then they put out Warning, and that's only okay. And, you know, they're sort of doing some things that, I don't know if I'm growing out of the genre or I'm just less impressed with them. And then they put out in 2004, American Idiot. And it is, if you're a hardcore punk who loves to tell people they sold out, then this is probably the moment that Green Day did that. If you just like good music for the sake of good music,
it's such a great album.
It's such a great album. So good.
Jesus of Suburbia is a masterpiece. It really
brilliant
is.
Brilliant to put together 9-minute songs, 11-minute songs, and tell this story throughout the album. Everything about it is fantastic. And so this is about a year later. It's the summer of 2005. And I've been living up near Thunder Bay for a year or so. And I'm coming home for what my sisters and I, with the help of some family, have put together as a 25th wedding anniversary for my parents. But it's a surprise. They don't know what's happening, right? So I'm trying to come down. How do I get down there? I'm going to stay somewhere. I'm going to go stay with my aunt and uncle. Because if they see me showing up, why are you here, right? What's going on? So I think I come down on the Wednesday for this Saturday party. And I get word a couple weeks beforehand that my uncle is taking my cousin Adam, who is exactly 10 years younger than me. So at the time, I think he's 11 or 12. My uncle is taking them up to see their first Green Day concert. And this is how you know this is probably the moment Green Day has sold out, right? His 11 and 12-year-olds are wanting to go to your show. But I'm like, well, I want to go to that show, right? Like,
of course.
I had been always really close with this cousin and this aunt and uncle or whatever, and so I managed to grab a ticket. I don't remember if I'd had to work hard or if they were still easily available. I don't remember. It's an outdoor venue right at Molson Park. It might have just been grab a last-minute ticket. Mm-hmm. But I remember I'm driving up there from Oshawa to Barrie with my uncle and these three 12-year-olds in the back seat that are all excited for their first concert. And I should point out, it wouldn't have really mattered, but it did to me at the time. Anti-Flag was one of the opening bands, was wild too, right? It was Anti-Flag, Jimmy Eat World, and Green Day was the bill. And so we get up to Barrie, and, you know, like we talked about off the hop, this was supposed to be sort of set list based. This was an unbelievable set list. First of all, they basically play American Idiot start to finish, and then just everything you would have wanted to hear, right? Brain Stew, you know, like all the hits that everybody would know after they finished up the album. And they're doing like weird Monty Python British things, call and return with the audience. And I'm having just an absolute blast. And we get about halfway through the show, and I kind of go running back to the beer tent, grab myself a beer. I come back to sort of where our group had been. And there's, for whatever reason, the seas have parted. Like, I can kind of, I see an opening. I can, like, run to the middle of this crowd. I'm going to be, like, eight rows from the stage. And I sort of go for it, and I feel something pulling on my shirt, and I look behind. It's one of my cousin's friends, this, like, 12-year-old girl, who's like, if you're going, I'm going. And she's like,
amazing.
And my uncle and my cousin, like, have a hold of her on the other end. They're like, you're not going in there. You're not going in the pit. Like, you're not this guy. And I've never, outside of the car ride up, I don't know this girl. But, like, she's, like, 90 pounds.
Jeez.
4'11" or whatever. Meanwhile, I'm a full-grown guy. Like, sorry, you're staying back with them. I'm going for it. I managed to get up there, and I'm standing with these guys who are now passing around joints and whatever. And like, who? I'm suddenly standing in the middle of their group unknowingly, and they're like, well, whatever. Welcome, man.
Join us.
Right.
One of us.
Yeah. It was such a good show, though. Like I said, the set list, start to finish, man. Unbelievable. And I wouldn't say, like Green Day, I really like, but a top five favorite band? Maybe not. But that night, that set list, everything they did.
Everything was perfect.
That's it, man. Yeah. And just having gone up with my cousin, it's funny, he would watch me sell out later on while he stayed hardcore, right? Like, he always credited me as like making him a punk rock fan. And he'd come up like, hey, have you heard the new whatever? I'm like, no.
I'm old now.
What are you talking about? Why are they so angry? And so I told him,
too tired to be that angry. Right. Now.
And so we're talking like now, a little later on, 2012, 2013 or whatever. I remember saying to him, like, my speed now is like Gaslight Anthem. That's as heavy as I get, kind of thing. And he goes, oh, you have to check out the Menzingers. I was like, all right, I'll check out the Menzingers. Spot on. Like, he nailed my old man, formerly punk rock heart, right? Like, and now I love the Menzingers. I have to tell him that now and then, like, because it went from me teeing him up in his younger days to like, yeah, you know, go check out the Buzzcocks or go like these old punk bands to later on. I'm like, no, man, I'm completely out of touch. And he's like, oh, I got you covered. You're going to love the Menzingers. And he nailed it. So
outstanding.
Green Day, 2005, the American Idiot Tour in Barrie. And the one bummer I will say to wrap this up or this particular segment up is I remember them, you know, it's all anti-Bush, right? That's the whole album was, he's like, and Toronto, Canada is now the, or no, he just said Canada. He said, Canada is now the official home of Green Day. And he gets the big roar. Less than a year later, there's a DVD and live album set that come out together. And the DVD portion is shot at a concert in England. He said, England is now the home of Green Day, man. Really let me down. Oh, he said it everywhere he
Billy
went.
Billy Joe said that everywhere?
Honestly, just...
Billy,
I really thought
that.
He meant it. No. Thought he meant to us. I thought we were the new home. But
well, you are until England was available. And then, you know what?
We got one more for you, man, on your side. What did...
Oh, man. So, I really wrestled with number three. And I got some honorable mentions. We talked about OLP earlier.
Yep.
And... I was at Red Hot Chili Peppers in 2003 on their By the Way tour here in Ottawa on the floor for that. That was absolutely incredible. But I think the one I'm going with for number three is probably my favorite band of all time. And the first time I saw them here in Ottawa on their Lateralist tour, Tool.
Really?
They played the Corral Center August 24th, 2002.
The Corral Center, man. Does that take you back?
Yeah. Went with my cousin Dan, and it was, I'd have to go back and look, but it's probably the first concert I went to without an adult.
I need an adult. I need an adult.
And like summer 2002 would have been, I guess, the summer after grade 10 for me.
Right.
And again, we talked about drums, and I think Danny Carey is the best drummer on the planet.
Okay.
Tool's drummer.
Right.
And I, that set list they played in, after their intermission, they didn't do an encore because, I mean, Tool can be a little bit pretentious.
A little bit.
And a lot of their fans can be extremely pretentious. I don't consider myself, and I mean, I'm not the final judge on this. I don't think I'm like a lot of Tool fans,
right?
Who are very gatekeepery and very pretentious.
Well, like we just talked about with the punk rock thing, right? Like, who gets to decide who's the sellout, who's the poser, who's the what?
Yeah,
punk rock,
exactly.
Which was founded on being welcoming, is actually now super, not now, what the hell do I know now what the scene's like. At the time, there was a bit of a scene that was like, no, I'll tell you what's punk. You're like, okay, well, fuck off then.
Yeah, yeah. But so for this show, they opened with Sober, which was one of the few Tool songs that when I had a band, we could kind of sort of play.
Right.
Because it's, as far as Danny Carey drums go, it's relatively basic.
Right.
We played Sober and Schism were the two songs that my band tried to pull off.
Okay. See, I know Schism. I don't think I know Sober.
You would probably know it if you heard it.
Okay.
It's,
I'm not a big Tool guy.
No. Yeah. And that's fair.
Yeah.
But was at the start of the show, was right in the front. Like on,
nice.
Like right on the edge of the pit. And I could not stop, like, just watching Danny Carey play drums. I was in awe, like my jaw on the floor, and people kept getting thrown into me from the pit. And I mean, in 2002, I weighed probably like 90 pounds soaking wet. So I'm almost getting bowled over by these people. And I ended up having to move back for the second half of the show because it was just too difficult to navigate. And just watching, like, there was a moment in the show where Danny Carey broke a drumstick, threw the broken one away, like, pushed his hair back and grabbed another one. And if I hadn't been watching, you wouldn't have known because he didn't miss a beat.
Wow.
Like, he's unbelievable. He's an octopus. But in the second half of the set, they played from the album. And if there are any Tool fans out there, they played Disposition, Reflection, and Triad as like a suite together.
Nice. Okay.
And it's something I've seen Tool three times now. And that's the thing that I remember. And like my cousin Dan and I've every time I've seen Tool, I've seen them with my cousin Dan. And that's like one of the moments that we flash back on together, right? Is that moment. And I remember he found me in the crowd and like we're having a beer or something and just like our minds melted. And the way they worked like multimedia into the show, and it wasn't the longest set list, but it was so like just sonically and
did you
visually.
Say, and maybe I, what year was this?
2002.
Okay. Yes, you did. Okay.
Yeah. 2002. Yeah. So I don't think I was legally able to drink beer.
Well,
I might not have even had a beer at that show. I was pretty straight-laced back then.
Yeah, but, okay.
It was just such... And it, more than anything for me was watching Danny Carey perform live for the first time just absolutely melted my brain and almost made me want to never play drums again because it's one of those
Instead
things
Instead of being motivational,
where,
it's like... You're being shamed.
Yeah,
almost.
he's working on a level that I will never even be able to come close to. So what's the point? Like, that's how good.
But in that regard, how do any of us enjoy sports, right? The whole point is supposed to be, look at this guy doing things that I could never dream of doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I didn't stop playing drums after then. But it was, that one, like, there one of my honorable mentions, and we alluded to him a little bit earlier, but Kanye West at Blues Fest in 2015.
Really, eh?
I know a lot of people were upset because he cut a lot of his songs short. He started late. And Ottawa has the curfew.
Yeah.
So you can't play past, what is it?
I don't even know.
11 p.m., I think. Like 10 p.m., 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And so you get into the second half of his set list, and he'd play like a verse and a half of a song and be like, I got too many hits. We got to go on to the next one. And I thought it was hilarious and awesome at the time. I think a lot of people
were pissed. No question, when this guy was at his best, and he's gone crazy as shit here in the last few
and
years.
And
that's a separate issue, right?
It is.
Like, we're talking about best set lists, best performances, things like that. There was no question he was brilliant for a time at what he was putting together and the career he was.
It's hard to be a Kanye fan now.
Yeah.
I can't really go back and listen to his stuff. And looking at like his first five albums, I thought they were all like unassailable masterpieces.
Right.
And now it's one of those things like I can't be a Kanye fan.
It's hard, right?
I can't.
Because you can't not think about it, right? Like
it's weird because for the Beatles, like John Lennon beat his wife.
Right.
And so it's hard to sort of separate that. Like,
we've talked about it in here 100 times. Like, what is my responsibility when a Michael Jackson song that I really like or really liked comes on? Am I supposed to skip it? Am I allowed to enjoy it, knowing what we know about him now? I mentioned Anti-Flag. Like, I probably should have, but I haven't gone through and wiped my catalog clear of Anti-Flag songs. But I do more often than not when they come on, end up skipping them because
you feel icky.
Yeah. There's like a few minutes where you're kind of like, fair enough, right? Like, that's another perfect example of one that comes up, and for the first couple seconds, you're like, and it takes you back, and you got a little toe tap going or something.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, right, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And it just sort of bums you out. And
it's weird where we draw the line, though, because, and like, John Lennon's been dead for so long that I think that colors it. And like, with Michael Jackson, I was listening to, I think it was Gameplay from TSN 1050, and I think Kevin Weeks talked about coming out of a Michael Jackson Broadway show, and like everyone was just floating after the show. And my take was like, I almost can't believe they made a show with what's gone on with him.
Yeah.
But when you separate the music from the man, like, the music's unassailable.
Yep.
So it's...
No, he was a legend, and he was brilliant. And you also was a bad person.
Yeah, that's really, really difficult to reconcile.
Yeah.
And so that's why Kanye didn't make my podium. But that show, I saw him on his Life of Pablo tour in Montreal as well, which sonically, like, listening to the show in the moment, the sound quality wasn't great, but the vibes were incredible and the stage was incredible.
That's why I had so much, because as you suggested off the top of the show, I laid down the rules, set list.
Yeah.
We're talking set list. But as I sat down and talked and started, you know, trying to make my list and put this together, was like, oh, but I got this show that I remember so much more fondly because of, like, the vibes or the moment or what was going on. Nope, set list. Stay set list. And you're like, all right. But like you said, sometimes there are other things going into it, the crowd that you saw it with, or, you know, just the sound of the venue, right? All these sorts of things factor in. So,
Music, man. It's wonderful.
I know we got to wrap shortly, so I'll go quick here on my...
No, don't go quick. We got time.
You know, we were just sort of talking about it, you know, set list versus other factors. And you mentioned, you know, some things you like, people you might want to see before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Neil Young once down in Toronto, but the set list I didn't love it.
Yeah.
But he's coming to Ottawa. He's coming to Blues Fest. And the buddies who got me into Neil Young, we're talking about, right? How many more times are you going to tour? How many more times are you going to be up here? We should probably check that out, right? So we'll see if he can up that. And that one,
with Crazy Horse,
that's
right?
That's it. The last time I saw him, it was just him and his wife and the piano, and it was a good show.
Big draw, though.
It was a good show.
Yep.
But this would be different, right? Let's see what the Crazy Horse version looks like. And so you start to think about those sorts of things. You know, I think about a couple different festivals I went to with friends and, you know, different occasions. But if we're talking set list, I apologize to the listener who's heard me talk 100 times about this band. I can't escape the Hip. I have to mention the Hip here. And I'm going to mention them locally because I'm pretty sure the best set list I ever saw the Hip play was on 2015 up here part of Blues Fest. They're touring on what was a weird anniversary tour of Fully Completely. It was like the 22nd anniversary or something like that.
It counts. It counts.
And I had already seen that concert once down in Oshawa, again, 5,000 seat building, and it was incredible. The vibes were awesome in a small building like that. It's rocking. Saw it with a bunch of, you know, people I'd sort of grown up with, was close with. It was incredible. But the one here in Ottawa at Blues Fest, I went to with a friend of mine, and it had like rained all day. We're sitting there having dinner at the Royal Oak on Wellington, like waiting as long as we can for it to lighten up. So we make our way over there, and it does lighten up briefly. And so we get there, and we go running to the beer table, two beers each. And by the time we're running back from there, we're basically at the back because we're the last to arrive. Other people were more hardcore than us, willing to deal with the rain. But they play, from start to finish, the Fully Completely album, which is just a banger of an album. That had been the whole tour, right? And that's what they had done in Oshawa a few months earlier, played that album start to finish. And then they had a couple other songs to kind of round it out in the encore and whatever. But you've seen the hip too. Like sometimes Gord's just, he's in a mood or he wants to play something you don't even remember from some album from 1993 or whatever. This time, by the time we were halfway through just the Fully Completely portion, it was pouring rain. Everyone was absolutely drenched. And the girl I had gone with is like 5'5". And the person kind of just in front of us has this umbrella tipped back and it's just sloshing rain down onto her face and stuff. And so she did this thing because she and I had gone to a few different concerts together where like she's small enough. She can like yoink, kind of pop through into the next row. But she would always like reach back and try and drag me through. I'm like, I'm 6'3", 240 at the time. I don't pop through the same little holes you do. You pull me through people who are now looking at me like, fuck you, right? But we, by the time this show was over, because some people get fed up when it's raining that much and they left. This was, by the time they finished the Fully Completely album, which on its own was incredible, right? To see it again, start to finish live outdoors. I don't know if they took a look at the people still standing there in the pouring rain while they were under the, there's a little roof on the stage right there doing it. It felt like they made a decision, nothing crazy tonight, just hits the rest of the way. Just the stuff that everyone wants to hear to kind of reward people for. And again, maybe that was always the set list, but I choose to interpret it as,
yeah,
we're going to reward you people for sticking around. And so, you know, you come out of it and you're getting poets and you're getting music at work, which I know some people say is too poppy or whatever. But in terms of getting a crowd that's kind of cold and wet, dancing and moving around, that set list, man, if you go and you look it up just on setlist.fm or whatever, Tragically Hip in Ottawa on July 10th, I believe it was, of 2015. After playing Fully Completely, start to finish, it's just hit after hit after hit. And I'll never forget it because, you know, a friend of mine uploaded the photos afterwards and, of course, was clever enough to use The Rain Came Down Berserk. And the stuff like that, just the little...
Yeah.
It was setlist based, but also the environment tied into it. And it was the last time I saw The Hip without the cloud being over it. I saw them twice on that final tour, which was the very next year, but none of us knew at that point that was coming, right? That was 2016, where Gord announces he's sick and they're doing the final tour. And so 2015, Ottawa Blues Fest, Tragically Hip, the Fully Completely tour, man. And just sitting right there is the t-shirt from that night. Got all the tour dates from that particular tour hanging up here in the studio. You know, I said I'd sort of do my best to avoid The Hip, but if we're doing set lists, that was the night. That was the night.
You got to include it. Yeah. You got to include it. And it's interesting because I've seen a few bands like that where it's sort of dependent on whether the singer's feeling it or not. Or
I saw The Hip here in 2013 and Gord stunk.
I was at that show.
It was a bad show.
That's the only time I saw The Hip live in person.
Mm, really?
And yeah, it was so disappointing.
It was bad.
So disappointing.
I've seen them 11 times. That is the lowest. I've made the list before because I'm one of those nerds.
Yeah.
Right? That is the lowest ranked of all the 11 was that night. It was a bad show.
Yeah, that was my experience. Yeah. I saw Bob Dylan in Ottawa. And he stood in the back of the stage playing keyboard, mumbling his way through songs the entire show. He was awful.
Right.
Just awful. And I'd waited my whole life to see Bob Dylan.
Right.
The saving grace from that show is, you know who opened for Bob Dylan?
No.
Foo Fighters.
Wow.
Acoustic set.
Really? Okay.
And they were unbelievable. And it saved the show for me.
Yeah.
But I saw Counting Crows in 2012 at the Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. And Adam Duritz is one of those guys that, sort of like Gord Downie, sort of like Bob Dylan, when he performs live, sometimes he goes his own way.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't want to say it's like a screw you to his fans, but
it sort of is.
It sort of is.
When that 2013 one, Rob and I went and we brought his brother, Jeff, who's never been a Hip fan, but he said, I'll come with you. Like, let's show me live. Show me what this guy's. And of course, that's the night Gord decides, nah, fuck it. I'm not really feeling it. And you're like, that was our one chance to swing Jeff. Didn't happen.
Yeah. And it's funny because I don't want to say I held it against the Hip, but it affected how I felt about them for a little while.
Yeah.
But I remember watching the last show. I was on vacation out east in Antigonish, staying with my brother. We got together and like, that was great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
And I've been able to separate that.
Sure.
But like when I saw the Counting Crows in Connecticut, pretty good.
Right.
Like he wasn't completely dialed in, but he wasn't dialed out either.
Right.
And it was a fun show. There were a lot of songs that if you tried to sing along with, you weren't going to be able to.
That was the biggest bummer of that 2013 Hip Night.
Oh my God.
I know all of these songs and it seems like I don't because you're doing your own thing up there, right? That's offbeat.
And that was the thing with Bob. It took three verses for me to realize Bob Dylan was playing Like a Rolling Stone.
No
and
way.
Who I felt bad for most that night was his band because they have to read his mood and like, all right, Bob's on one tonight. Like, let's just sort of
muddle through until
he can figure out where he is. But that's one of the things too. And that's something that I've tried to take away is like for a little while I held that show against the Hip and was like, they're a horrible live band.
Right.
And then you sort of realize, okay, maybe when you're playing the same songs every night, like it's one of my favorite music documentary of all time is History of the Eagles Part One.
Hmm.
And I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't.
It's incredible. I don't think it's streaming right now, unfortunately, but it is. And there are two parts. Part two is a little bit self-indulgent. And part two, like there are parts of part two that are worth watching, but you watch part two and you're like, this is how part one got made.
Okay.
But there's a moment where Randy Meisner, who was the first sort of falsetto upper range vocal guy on the Eagles, and his big hit was Take It to the Limit.
Right.
And there was a show where Randy Meisner was like, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to sing it tonight. And Glenn Frey tells him off. And it's like, you think I don't want to sing? You think I want to sing Take It Easy every night?
Right.
No, I don't. But that's what the people are here for.
Yeah. This is what they paid us for.
And like, that's why Randy Meisner ended up leaving the Eagles. But it's one of those things where, like, trying to balance it.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that is so incredible about a guy like Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Is that every show, his most important show is his next show. And, like, I I've seen him three times on the same tour. And every show, it was like, there might be somebody who's never been to a Bruce Springsteen show.
Right.
And I want to make this
the best
show.
I better bring it for them, yeah.
And I think the artists, the musicians who have that approach are few and far between.
No, I think that's right.
And I don't think it's unfair for an artist to not feel that way because that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've all had jobs. And as glamorous as being a rock star can be, it's still a job. But guys like Bruce Springsteen who give it 150% every time, it's special. And it's rare.
I better sing Glory Days tonight. That's why they came, right?
Like, and I don't want to friggin' sing Glory
Days.
I don't. I've sung it a million and one times.
Yeah.
But that's the other cool thing about Bruce is he'll play the offbeat songs as well.
Sure.
But yeah, it's
well, we were both saw Garth here. He yep. opened the show. That was a ballsy move. He opened the show with something new from the new album nobody knew. And after that first song, or at least when I saw him there that night, I don't know if he did the same thing on the Saturday when you saw him, he started the concert with something I'd never heard before in my life. It was a brand new song because he did have a new album out. And then he says to the crowd afterwards, he goes, I got one more, just one more after the new stuff, or this one, or just one more new one, and then we'll get to what you want to hear. You're like, good, man. We're all right here then. No yep. problem, right? And it's not that the new one, the first one that he opened with, wasn't high energy, but you sort of would have expected, you know, a banger to bring you in, yeah. right? A hit or whatever. But he started out with something else, and then he told you after that one, before you got too restless, don't worry, it's coming.
Don't worry. The stuff you want is on its way.
It's coming. Yeah. It's coming. And so I get it, right? There's a business element of trying to get people to know the newest thing you've done. There's a personal element of being tired of playing the same things for 30 years if you're a Bruce Springsteen or a Garth Brooks or a whatever. But there's the business element is, do you want people to come next time? Then you better play the hits, right? That's what we're all here to sing. We all want play Low Places. That's the only reason we're here. Play Friends in Low Places.
Well, I saw Steve Earle at the Kempville Music Festival nice. A few okay. summers yeah. ago. And I'm a big Steve Earle guy.
Right.
I grew up listening to Copperhead Road on vinyl. But some of his other albums, like I loved his work in The Wire. I loved his work on Tremé as an actor. I've loved his album, like Transcendental Blues, El yep. Corazon, a lot of like later Steve Earle stuff, more recent stuff. I absolutely adore. And he was with, the Dukes when I believe that's the name of the band. I'm two beers in now. So, but I'm questioning.
You're not going to have me question your Steve Earle doll.
No, but, I think he played Copperhead Road like probably two-thirds of the way through the show.
Right.
And after he played Copperhead Road, 50% yeah. of the people left.
I'm out.
They grabbed their chairs and they yeah. left. And
this
I was like,
what, tier four.
What are you guys doing? He's incredible.
Right.
And I mean, it was great for me because I was right at the front.
Sure.
I'm a dozen feet away from Steve Earle and he's playing his mandolin and belting out like Galway Girl and all these incredible tunes. And it was awesome. But I don't understand that the people who go to a show for one song. And one of the things that I love about music, and I talked earlier a little bit about buying My Chemical Romance tickets
yeah.
to see Muse,
yeah.
and then Muse wasn't there. So I bought the max amount of tickets. I think it was 8 tickets and was like, what the hell am I getting? So I sold most of them, but I had a buddy who was a huge MCR fan. And so I went to the show with him.
Right.
And I was not an MCR fan at all.
Right.
I wanted to see Muse.
Yep.
And it was their Black Parade tour.
Sure.
And they played the Black Parade almost in its entire... And it was incredible.
Yeah.
And it, like, that's one of the sneaky best shows I've been to, where the show versus my expectations.
Yes.
And it was... And now I love that album because of the experience of seeing them perform it live.
That's it, man. Takes you to a time and place.
If you open yourself up to these opportunities and these experiences, I think it can be really fulfilling. And it was just sad to see all these people leaving.
Well, I had a very
Copperhead
similar...
Road because Steve Earle's so much more than Copperhead Road. The Counting Crows are so much more than Mr. Jones.
I had a similar experience just to wrap here as your MCR one, which was in college. Billy Talent was going to headline the ACC, and I couldn't have possibly cared less about Billy Talent. But it was going to be Monin, Anti-Flag, Rise Against were the three openers. And I was like, got time for that. So went down with a bunch of college friends, and I had seen Billy Talent a year or two earlier at Warped, and they stunk live.
Right.
They were terrible live. Now, they were a young band, just sort of figuring it out.
Yep.
And I sort of assumed, you know what, I'm going to watch Monin. I sort of care about Monin. I don't really care about Monin. But Anti-Flag and Rise Against I'll really like. And then whatever, I'll peace out to one of the beer stands. The rest of my friends will like Billy Talent and we'll roll out. And I decided I'm going to stick around for the first couple songs of Billy Talent anyway. Like, what the hell? And they were so much better. Now, you're indoors with your own crew instead of on Warped where you're mm-hmm. outdoors and whatever. And they had clearly improved.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember two or three songs in, they stop, and Ben, who's the lead singer, kind of says to the crowd, and I've told this story on the pod before, but this sort of changed my whole mood for the rest of the concert and made me stay. He goes, we have played every dog shit music festival, every terrible nightclub from St. John's to Vancouver, and to be here in their hometown of Toronto, right at the Pinnacle, headlining an Air Canada Centre show. He goes, we never thought we'd get here. This is the first time we've ever done it. It means the world to us. Thank you for being here. It changed my vibe, right? Yeah. I wouldn't say now I'm a huge Billy Talent fan, but I was willing to stand and go, yeah, all right, like, let's hear it, right? Like, let's see what else you got tonight. And they were really good, like, compared to when I'd seen them and being outdoors and the growth they'd had. I'm sticking around. I got time for this now. And sometimes it's just that simple, right? You know, if you open your mind a little bit to MCR or to Billy Talent or whatever, you'll enjoy the show and maybe you'll take something away with you. So. Yeah,
absolutely. And just one quick one.
Of course,
just,
man. Of course.
Because you triggered me.
Yeah.
You've popped something in my brain talking about the Garth Brooks, weaving the new stuff in with the stuff people wanted to hear. But went and saw Tears for Fears last summer in Montreal.
Last summer? Wow.
Yeah, last summer at Place Belle in Laval.
Right.
And I've never been like a huge Tears for Fears guy. Right. I know they're big hits, but
I know two of their songs. And that's
My wife loves Tears for Fears.
Yeah. Okay.
And we went to this show, and you talk about weaving in new stuff with the stuff that people want to hear.
Yeah.
And the set list that they put together was like a masterclass in how to play a show where you're working your new stuff in.
Right.
To a fan base that's there to see you, because Tears for Fears obviously have been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
So if you're going to a Tears for Fears show, it's because you're a fan. But they sounded great.
Mm-hmm.
They weaved the new stuff in with the bang, like the way they deployed the set list. And we saw The Cure as well.
Don't go too long without a hit, but you can weave some stuff in there.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And when you play the hit, kill it.
Yeah.
And the fan, like the third song they played was Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
And the ovation they got after that song and like during the home stretch of that song was one of the best crowd moments I've experienced at a concert. Like it was unbelievable. And it was just, and I don't want to, you know, dump on The Cure here because The Cure played for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I talked, my number one set list was Paul McCartney, and he played for like 3 hours.
Right.
The Cure did not need to play for 3 hours. It was very self-indulgent, and we went a long time between songs that I wanted to hear or cared to hear.
That makes me crazy, man.
And the Cure show almost was like, if I could have fast-forwarded to the second encore, I maybe would have, because they sprinkled a song or two in that I was like, but they go too long in between, and it was a bit self-indulgent, but they were there for like 3 hours. They sounded great. It was just a little over the top. That Tears for Fears show was a masterclass in a band doing sort of like a victory lap tour while also promoting something new.
Yeah.
They did a perfect job. So I wanted to give them some roses as we wrap up the show today.
Yeah. Well, and we'd better do that, because you and I, it seems like, could do this for a very long time.
Well,
that
I'll be back again soon.
Yeah, we will do that. But, you know, it seems like, oh, your story reminds me of this time, and my story reminds you of this time. So we will wrap it up here. We have got through our lists and then some, but we will find some more musically themed, and whatever. We'll do some sports stuff, too.
Yeah, please. Red Blacks starting up soon.
That's right, man. Just around the corner.
I'm missing the preseason, going to Europe.
Really? Where are you going?
England and Italy.
Okay.
Nice. Looking forward to that. So it'll...
Get the... you got to check in, get the Leversage travel advice for around Italy. He was just there.
Yeah. I don't want to lose my passport, so I don't need to talk to Lever.
Okay. That's about right. Maddie, thank you so much for doing this, buddy. Oh. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming in and talking some music. I love doing this on the podcast. We always get cool feedback when we do the music shows, and you were an easy guy to tap on the shoulder for that. I knew you'd have it covered. So
anytime, my friend. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For the good listener who's been here all week, you've heard the plate tampers behind the studio. Now you're getting the sirens as we wrap things up. That's just the way things have been this week in the TCA studio. For Matt Conesvita, my name is Matt Robinson. Thank you so much for listening. We're on social media at TallCanAudio. Make sure you're subscribed to the pod wherever you're hearing us right now, and we'll catch you next time.